Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest is Rebecca Mackay, whose new novel, The Great Believers, is now available from Viking Books. The novel alternates between Chicago in the 80s and Paris in 2015 with the AIDS crisis as the backdrop. Yale Tishman is a development director at Northwestern University who's trying to bring some extraordinary artwork into the museum from the mid-20s, and meanwhile, many around him are stricken with AIDS, and when his friend Nico Marcus finally succumbs to the disease, Yale meets Nico's sister, Fiona, who 30 years later is in Paris trying to track down her own daughter, Claire, who disappeared into a cult. That's a grand oversimplification of the plot, but we'll get into it more. Rebecca, Chicago native, take us back to the 80s in Chicago when AIDS was a death sentence. I've seen a lot of art covering AIDS epidemic in New York and Los Angeles. What was it like in Chicago?
Yeah, it was a different story. You know, many similarities, of course, but you have a smaller city, even though it is and was the third biggest city in the U.S., but a little bit smaller gay community than, say, San Francisco or New York, and very centralized in this one neighborhood called Boys Town, which is exactly what it sounds like. There's a little bit more time to prepare, actually. It's about an extra year or so in there that Chicago is lagging behind the coasts in terms of the time in which AIDS really hits. It was also really interesting for me researching and finding that, the centrality, the geographic centrality of that community, the way that people tended to live close together, the fact that it was a little bit smaller community than New York or San Francisco, I think made it really helpful for some of the grassroots organizations that sprang up, some of the ways people cared for each other. That was really lovely to read about.
What do you think accounted for the one-year lag? I mean, it's not like fads start on the coast and move in. This wasn't a fad.
Right. I mean, it's, I think it had to do with I'm probably not the one to speculate, because I think you need to talk to someone from the CDC to figure out why that happened. But I think it might have had to do with people traveling, all kinds of other things. I think it was also simply awareness. I think there was more awareness of AIDS on the coasts a little bit before it got to the Midwest. And there might have been a little bit of wishful thinking in Chicago of, well, that applies to those people out there in those bigger cities, but it's not going to reach us here, which, of course, was not true.
Well, and, as I think back to the different art forms that dealt with AIDS, I think of the great Broadway musical Rent and the movie Philadelphia. Those all dealt with AIDS from a very tiny snapshot in time. Your book here starts really from the beginning and takes us basically up to the present. What made you track the entire story rather than just a tiny sliver of time?
You know, it actually started, when I began the book, I was only writing about the 80s. And in my research, a lot of my research was interviews with people, simply because there wasn't as much in writing or in film form about Chicago during the AIDS crisis. So I had a lot of sit-down interviews with survivors, but also doctors, nurses, historians, journalists, etc. And I found myself increasingly fascinated by this 30-year span and by the way that people are still very much, of course, living in the aftermath. In part, and I have not to give anything away, but I address this a little bit in my book, people who were handed a death sentence in the mid-80s and, got ready to die and are still here 30 years later. And then also the people who, dealt with what was essentially a war. They have PTSD, caring for friends, living through all of this, seeing everyone close to them die, their whole generation. And then, you're still here decades later, and how have you continued with your life? And so I really wanted to write about that as well. And I went back and wrote these sections that belong to Fiona 30 years later, and wove those into the beginning of the book, and then continued writing back and forth between the two of them, knowing that gap was a lot of what my story was about.
Well, it seems like you can look at all the statistics you want, mortality rates and those types of things, but to sit down with doctors, with survivors and those type of things, do you feel like you have any grasp of the understanding of it? Because I've talked to a couple AIDS survivors, but not probably as many as you have. I still don't think I have a grasp on what this disease meant to that particular community at the time.
I mean, I think it became my job to understand it in writing this book. I certainly don't understand everything. And to be clear, you know, I was born in 1978, and I'm a straight woman, although I have, you know, a bunch of friends now who are HIV positive, although I'm very involved in that community, I certainly was too young to be in the thick of things at the time. But it really, you know, I have no business writing a book about this if I can't feel like I understand it on some pretty significant levels. And while I'm sure there are things I missed, and it's never the same as living through something yourself, I do think that the things I read, certainly, and then more importantly to me, those conversations that I had, which were long and often, you know, took place over many different days, I think that they really helped me get into the mindset of both what was happening then and how you continue to live your life now looking back on that time.
When, as you look back, I'm a Midwesterner. I grew up in the Midwest, and I was young in the 80s. I you know, I came of age in the 80s, and so we didn't know a lot about AIDS. We'd read about it. Rock Hudson is the first thing I remember, and then really Magic Johnson. And those were the two big people that I knew of from my life. But, I mean, hell, we used to joke about it when we were in school and those types of things. Do you remember back when this was going on, having any cognizant awareness of the gravity of the disease?
I actually do. And it's not that I was, you know, adjacent to it in any significant way. I grew up in the Chicago suburbs. I think, you know, for whatever reason, I was just very aware of it as a kid. You know, if the news was on in the background, or if I stayed home from, you know, sick from school, and there was a daytime talk show on that addressed it, I was all ears, and I'm not quite sure why. And certainly, you know, I don't think I had a great understanding necessarily of it as a kid, but I think that probably was helpful. You know, children, if, you know, kids are porous, you know, they absorb a lot of stuff. And, you know, I think it was a good thing that I didn't have some of the adult defenses of, oh, no, that's happening to those people over there for some reason that I'm just made up, you know. It felt very immediate. I felt, you know, tremendous empathy watching these people, listening to these people, even if it was on the television. That said, you know, I was living my, you know, own kid life and didn't particularly, you know, spend a lot of time thinking about it. But you know, by the time I was, you know, I got to high school in the early 90s, our sex ed was nothing but HIV practically, you know, very much a topic of discussion. And then, as you said, some of that great art started coming out, you know, certainly things like Philadelphia, but also Angels in America, you know, novels, short stories, things like that, that really affected me and really affected, I think, my, not only my understanding of this crisis, but my my empathy, you know, my growing empathy as an adolescent, as a very young adult.
My guest is Rebecca Mackay. We're talking about her new novel, The Great Believers. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Viking. Get out and purchase a copy and or download it and read it as an e-reader format. Rebecca, I would think it would be tempting, just for the ease of putting together a narrative, that you can paint all AIDS victims with a broad brush and treat them all the same into one large group. You didn't do that here, and really every character has their own story. How does that sort of specificity of characters define your writing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly one of the jobs of a fiction writer to make, a lot of the temptation is to make every character basically you, honestly, you know, because I'm only one person, I think a certain way. And while you can put a little bit of yourself into each character, they do have to be very different. One thing that helped me, actually, was that I started my novel in the year 1985, and I chose that year almost arbitrarily, just thinking, well, it's, you know, a little bit into the midst of things here, and soon learned that 1985 was the year that the test came out for what we now call HIV, but what was called HTLV-3 at the time. And something that I really hadn't been aware of was the tremendous variety of opinion on whether that test, first of all, was accurate. Secondly, whether it was worth it. Would you even want to know in a time when there's absolutely no medication to help you in any way? And thirdly, and most significantly for some people, was taking this test, basically signing yourself up for a quarantine registry. Were these test results going to be subpoenaed, co-opted in some way? And there was huge debate around this issue. I heard about that certainly from people I interviewed. I also went back and I was reading a lot of the gay weeklies from the 80s in Chicago, and reading the op-eds and the letters to the editor. That issue really helped me start to think about differentiating my characters. I'd already felt them out a little bit, but really thinking through with each of them, what's their reaction to this test? Are they going to get it? Why or why not? Do they think everyone else should get it? Why or why not? And no two characters, as I thought about it, really had the same reaction. And certainly there were many, many other ways that you're going to diverge your characters as well. But that was really a launching point for me.
There's another overriding theme of the book, and it's love. And, you know, it's probably the oldest theme of things that people write about. But nonetheless, each novel that I read takes it a different way. You seem to show some limitations on love in the book. And so how did those limitations either help or hurt what you were trying to do with the story?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm getting it exactly right because I might have edited it various ways. But at a certain point, one character turns to another and says, the saddest thing in the world is the failure of love. I would say that the flip side of that, which is also represented in this book, is that, you know, the salvation of the world is the endurance of love. That's not stated explicitly here, but it's certainly demonstrated, I think, by many of the characters. There is going to be human failure in many different ways in any book you write, but I think really became a theme here, the failures of certain relationships, certainly the failures of several different nuclear families. And at the same time, tremendous self-sacrifice and, you know, very enduring friendship in the face of a lot of loss. I think those were things that I was asking questions about rather than making statements about. Kind of throw your themes out there and write around them. And it's not that you're trying to come down with, you know, some certain takeaway or message, but those are the things that I'm, you know, trying to explore. Those are the things I'm questioning here.
As we talked about earlier, part of the book takes place in Paris. Did Paris choose you for a location, or did you choose Paris, and why?
I was interested very early on, and this was actually one of the first things I was going to write about before I even knew I was going to write about the AIDS epidemic, was really interested in the Paris art scene around World War I. That is talked about a lot in the book, as this woman who had been an artist model back then is donating her art. When I decided then to add the modern day sections to the book, because I talked about wanting that, you know, that gap, it felt right that Fiona, whose great aunt it was actually who had donated that art, would be returning to Paris. It would be, you know, coming full circle to this place that I'd wanted to write about. I was really interested in Paris originally, and still am, as, you know, around World War I. Before the war specifically, it had been this mecca, this city where people were coming from around Europe, people with, you know, a dollar in their pocket, or no dollars, francs, whatever it was in their pocket, to study art and to form a kind of chosen family with their fellow artists. And then World War I and the influenza come just steamrolling through and really decimating that generation. And then the way that these same artists were regrouping in Paris after the war, but tremendously changed. And the parallels between that and a city like Chicago, which, you know, is and was a mecca for LGBTQ youth, young adults from around the country, and the ways that they got there, and in the time between, you know, Stonewall and AIDS, things were looking up. But then AIDS came blasting through and decimating that generation. And those parallels were really fascinating to me and really were the original backbone of the book for me.
I would think as you do research, sometimes it's like pulling teeth trying to get people to talk to you, but after you publish something, a novel of this magnitude, you probably have people telling you stories when you make appearances, emailing, whatever, on social media. What are you hearing from people from Chicago who are survivors that you didn't interview for the book, but are they telling you you knocked this out of the park?
I've only heard good things so far, which is really nice. I'm sure that there are things in the book that someone will feel don't reflect their own experience. I'm sure I've made, you know, mistakes here and there. But for the most part, you know, as I was writing the book, I was really thinking about my audience in two ways, one of which was people who did not know this time and this place, for whom reading this, certainly it's a novel. It's not, you're not reading nonfiction, but that you're going to learn something by reading it. You're going to know a lot more about the AIDS crisis when you're done than when you started. At the same time, I was also thinking about the readers who had lived through this time intimately, and who, you know, would certainly be reading, you know, going to be the first ones to catch me on anything that wasn't quite right. But my, you know, my hope in writing for those readers as well was that they'd recognize themselves in here, that they'd feel some kind of catharsis in reading it, and that it's a book they'd be able to hand to a friend who wasn't there and say, listen, if you want to know what I lived through, this is a start. You know, the book's only been out since Tuesday, I'm only starting to hear from people, but it's been really gratifying that seems to be the case, that there is some recognition there.
You've taught at the Writers' Workshop in Iowa City before. Any plans to go back?
Yeah, I will be at Prairie Lights. I'm actually doing two readings in Iowa this summer. I'm reading at Dragonfly Books in Decorah on August 21st, and then on August 23rd, I will be at Prairie Lights. Oh, no, actually, and on the 22nd, I'll be at River Lights in Dubuque. I have three Iowa readings in a row, all in the middle of August.
Well, your mother's from Iowa, right?
She is. She grew up in Vinton, yeah.
All right. So, yeah, right over in eastern Iowa there. So, all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
The book is The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold, from the good folks at Viking. It's just a tremendous novel, and Rebecca's right. You will learn something when you read this novel. Rebecca, fantastic offering here. Thanks for sharing some time with us to talk about it.
Thank you so much.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
I'm in love, and I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried.